Welcome to this week's Ortho Digest Weekly Rundown for the week of April 13, 2026. We're covering 30 studies across arthroplasty, pediatrics, basic science, foot, ankle, spine, oncology, trauma, hand, and sports. Let's start with our first study. Lewis and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Intraoperative Bone Quality Assessments Are Reliable Compared with Opportunistic CT-Based Hounsfield Unit Measurements. This prospective cross-sectional study of 215 patients asked whether surgeons' intraoperative bone quality assessments using a 10-point Likert scale plus normal, osteopenic, or osteoporotic categorization correlate with opportunistic CT-derived Hounsfield unit measurements across 6 anatomic sites. The work extends prior validation of opportunistic CT Hounsfield unit measurement as a surrogate for DXA-based bone mineral density by showing that even without CT availability, intraoperative tactile and visual assessment achieves clinically acceptable diagnostic accuracy. One limitation: the cohort's young mean age of 44 years and low female proportion of 40.5% produce low baseline osteoporosis prevalence, which may overestimate real-world sensitivity in elderly or high-risk populations. Consider using intraoperative surgeon bone quality assessment as a practical reference standard when CT Hounsfield units are unavailable, as the correlation is strong, R.66, with 84% sensitivity and 97% specificity for detecting abnormal bone quality across multiple anatomic sites. Moving on. Young and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty the Mark Coventry Award paper, titled 5-Year Outcomes of a Randomized Controlled Trial on Cemented versus Uncemented Total Knee Arthroplasty, the Knee Fix Trial. This single-blinded RCT randomized 316 knees in 280 patients 1-1 to fully cemented or fully uncemented trabecular metal total knee arthroplasty with patellar resurfacing, with 97% follow-up at 5 years. The study extends Swedish knee arthroplasty register data and prior randomized trials by providing level 1 evidence on fixation and outcomes. One limitation: 5-year follow-up is insufficient to determine whether the radiographic fixation advantage of uncemented constructs translates into superior implant survivorship, as the critical divergence in revision curves typically emerges beyond 10 years. At 5 years, fully uncemented trabecular metal TKA produced significantly fewer non-progressive radiolucent lines than cemented TKA, 2 versus 27 cases with a relative risk of 0.50 p0.01, with equivalent patient-reported outcomes and revision rates. Next up, Waleka and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled Morphological Changes in Tennis Elbow After Platelet-Rich Plasma Injection, a Novel MRI-Based Assessment in a Randomized Controlled Study. This double-blind RCT compared leukocyte-rich PRP, leukocyte-poor PRP, and saline injection in 71 patients with chronic lateral epicondylar tendinopathy, using 3T MRI in the Superman position as the primary outcome tool, with interclass correlation coefficient greater than 0.90 reliability. The study extends prior work by providing high-quality imaging assessment of morphologic change. One limitation: the study lacks patient-reported functional outcomes, making it impossible to determine whether MRI-detected morphological differences translate into clinically meaningful symptomatic or functional benefit. Leukocyte-rich PRP reduced partial common extensor tendon tear size and soft tissue edema more than saline, but neither PRP formulation demonstrated overall superiority to saline injection at 6-month MRI follow-up. Moving along. McDessie and colleagues published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, titled Robotic-Assisted Surgery and Functional Alignment in Total Knee Arthroplasty, the RASCL Registry Nested 2x2 Factorial Randomized Trial. This registry nested multicenter 2x2 factorial RCT randomized 303 total knee arthroplasty patients to robotic-assisted versus computer-assisted surgery and functional versus mechanical alignment, with knee injury and osteoarthritis outcome score 12 change as the primary outcome at 2 years. The trial corroborates non-inferiority of functional alignment while simultaneously comparing robotic versus computer-assisted techniques. One limitation: 2-year follow-up is insufficient to determine whether the dramatically lower soft tissue release rate with functional alignment, 8.1% versus 44.8%, translates into differences in implant survivorship or late instability. In this 2x2 factorial trial, robotic-assisted surgery and functional alignment each failed to improve COAS-12 at 2 years compared to computer-assisted surgery and mechanical alignment, with mean differences of -2.8 and 0.3 points respectively, both 0.1. Shifting gears to sports medicine, Davy and colleagues published in Arthroscopy, titled Anterior Cruciate Ligament Reconstruction with Hamstring Tendon versus Quadriceps Tendon Autograft, Results in No Significant Differences in Patient-Reported Outcome Measures, Re-rupture rates, and clinical stability, a meta-analysis of level 1 randomized control trials. This meta-analysis of six level 1 RCTs compared hamstring tendon versus quadriceps tendon autograft ACL reconstruction in 374 patients with mean age 26.7 years. The analysis confirms equivalence specifically within level 1 randomized trial data, with emerging evidence suggesting a potential quadriceps tendon donor site morbidity advantage. One limitation, follow-up duration is short and inconsistently reported across included trials, precluding conclusions about graft durability, osteoarthritis progression, or late re-rupture rates. There was no significant difference between hamstring and quadriceps tendon autografts in re-rupture rate with a relative risk of 1.03, p.0.96, pivot shift positivity with a relative risk of 0.42, or IKDC and Lisholm scores, with one study suggesting lower donor site morbidity with quadriceps tendon. Now to trauma, Tamala and colleagues published in the Journal of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, titled Impact of Preoperative Heel Ulceration on Surgical Outcomes Following Open Reduction and Internal Fixation of Rotational Ankle Fractures. Using one-to-one propensity score matching from a nationally representative multi-institutional database, this study examined whether preoperative heel decubitus ulceration within 4 weeks of surgery independently worsens outcomes after ORIF for rotational ankle fractures. The work identifies preoperative heel ulceration as a discrete, previously unquantified preoperative risk factor associated with catastrophic downstream outcomes, including amputation. One limitation. The database design prevents determination of whether ulcer treatment or resolution prior to surgery mitigates the observed complication risk. Preoperative heel decubitus ulceration within 4 weeks of ORIF for rotational ankle fractures is associated with significantly elevated rates of 90-day surgical site infection, sepsis, and mortality, as well as markedly higher 1 and 3 year rates of non-union, revision surgery, and below-knee amputation, all p.0125 continuing in arthroplasty. Terhune and colleagues published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, titled Surprisingly Low Rates of Aseptic Loosening in 575 Rotating Hinge Total Knee Arthroplasties. This single-institution retrospective series evaluated 575 rotating hinge TKAs, 60% for aseptic indications and 40% for periprosthetic joint infection reimplantation, from 2002 to 2021, to characterize survivorship and failure modes at mean 6-year follow-up, ranging from 2 to 19 years. One limitation. Radiographic loosening was assessed only in the 425 non-revised knees, introducing survivorship bias that likely underestimates the true rate of component loosening. In 575 rotating hinge TKAs, 10-year survivorship free from aseptic loosening was 90%, but periprosthetic joint infection reimplantation cases carried double the revision risk with a hazard ratio of 2 and only 73% survivorship free from reinfection at 10 years. Moving to hip arthroplasty, Youssef and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled The Frank Stinchfield Award, How Accurate is the United States Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Definition of Success for Patients Undergoing Total Hip Arthroplasty. This multicenter prospective cohort of 6,116 patients evaluated whether the CMS definition of THA success, a 22-point WHO's JR improvement, accurately reflects patient satisfaction as measured by the ISAR scale at 1 year. The study extends Harris Hip Score benchmark literature by demonstrating that a fixed minimum change threshold systematically penalizes patients with higher preoperative function, a ceiling effect phenomenon not previously quantified at this scale for the WHO-JR in a CMS policy context. One limitation, the study does not include patients who were dissatisfied yet met CMS success criteria, leaving the full 2x2 misclassification matrix incompletely characterized for policy reform recommendations. Among 5,429 satisfied THA patients, 19% were misclassified as unsuccessful by the CMS 22-point WHO-JR improvement threshold, with every 10-point higher baseline WHO-JR score increasing misclassification odds 2.7-fold. Next, Berzinski and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery titled The Cost-Effectiveness and Quality of Life Analysis of Proximal Humerus Fractures in Patients Over 65 Years Old in the United States. This cost-utility analysis compared non-operative management, intramedullary nail, open reduction, and internal fixation, hemiarthroplasty, and reverse total shoulder arthroplasty for proximal humerus fractures in a 65-year-old base case patient using fixed complication and revision probabilities with 2025 USD costs. The analysis incorporates reverse total shoulder arthroplasty, not evaluated in the proffer trial, and demonstrates that its QALY advantage and cost trajectory make it the economically dominant strategy over a 10-year horizon. One limitation, the model uses a single 65-year-old base case patient and fixed complication probabilities, precluding subgroup analysis by fracture complexity. Reverse total shoulder arthroplasty dominates all other proximal humerus fracture treatment strategies in patients WO65, producing 7.1 sequeles at 10 years with an ICER of 60,374 per QLE, well below the $50,000 per QLE willingness to pay threshold. Shifting to pediatric spine. Cardin and colleagues published in the Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics, titled Preoperative MRI-Derived Navigation Reduces Radiation Exposure in Pediatric Spinal Fusion. This single-center retrospective study compared fluoroscopy-only CT-based navigation and MRI to synthetic CT navigation for pedicle screw placement in pediatric adolescent idiopathic scoliosis posterior spinal fusion across 94 patients. The work demonstrates that machine learning MRI to synthetic CT conversion can substitute for preoperative CT without sacrificing intraoperative radiation performance, adding a clinically actionable pathway to eliminate the largest single radiation source in this population. One limitation: pedicle screw accuracy, including breach rate and revision rate, was not reported, so the clinical safety equivalence of MRI to synthetic CT navigation versus CT-based navigation remains unestablished. MRI to synthetic CT navigation eliminated preoperative CT radiation, saving 19.6 millisexpol, while matching CT-based navigation intraoperative fluoroscopy time of approximately 47 to 48 seconds and effective dose of approximately 0.5 to 0.57 millisexpol in pediatric adolescent idiopathic scoliosis fusion. Moving to shoulder, Christie and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled Three-Dimensional Characterization of Glenoid Defects in Failed Shoulder Arthroplasties. This study 3D reconstructed CT scans of 100 patients undergoing revision to reverse total shoulder arthroplasty and 35 cadaveric control scapulae to characterize glenoid vault defect morphology. The work extends the Walsh glenoid classification system, which characterizes native glenoid morphology but does not address post-arthroplasty vault defects, by demonstrating that failed arthroplasty glenoids form distinct 3D morphologic clusters that existing 2D classification frameworks cannot capture. One limitation: cluster analysis was performed without correlation to index arthroplasty type, failure mechanism, or prior surgical history, making it impossible to determine whether the two clusters represent distinct failure pathways or simply a spectrum of the same process. 3D CT analysis of 100 failed shoulder arthroplasties identified two distinct glenoid defect clusters, differing significantly in six morphologic parameters, with cluster A showing greater height, thickness, retroversion, and smaller radii of curvature than cluster B. Continuing in hip, Sampson and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Utility of Machine Learning in Predicting Catastrophic Cardiac Complications Following Hip and Knee Periprosthetic Fracture Surgery Using Preoperative Parameters. This database study asked whether machine learning models could predict myocardial infarction and cardiac arrest following periprosthetic femur fracture surgery using preoperative variables extracted from a national quality improvement database in 3,805 patients. Prior literature documents 30-day mortality of 2 to 5% in elderly cohorts, but lacks predictive modeling for specific cardiac endpoints. This study demonstrates that preoperative biochemical parameters alone can discriminate catastrophic cardiac events, with AUC exceeding 0.82 across all models. One limitation: event rates for cardiac arrest were extremely low at 0.67 to 0.92%, creating class imbalance that may inflate AUC metrics and limit generalizability of the cardiac arrest models, despite reported Breer score performance. Four machine learning models predicted myocardial infarction with AUC 0.82 to 0.91 and cardiac arrest with AUC 0.76 to 0.94 following periprosthetic fracture surgery, with elevated creatinine, white blood cell count, and sodium and lower body mass index as the dominant predictors. Moving to shoulder, Daher and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled The Impact of an Intact Rotator Cuff on the Outcomes of Reverse Shoulder Arthroplasty, a meta-analysis of 20,924 patients. This PRISMA-compliant meta-analysis compared reverse total shoulder arthroplasty outcomes in glenohumeral osteoarthritis patients with intact cuff versus cuff-deficient patients across 12 studies. The analysis extends the standard of care evidence base for reverse total shoulder arthroplasty indications by demonstrating that intact cuff glenohumeral osteoarthritis patients represent a lower risk cohort with superior complication profiles. One limitation: the cuff deficient group is dominated by cuff tear arthropathy patients, making it impossible to isolate the effect of isolated rotator cuff tear without osteoarthritis as a distinct indication. And the ASCS functional advantage did not reach the minimal clinically important difference, undermining the clinical significance of the patient-reported outcome difference. Reverse total shoulder arthroplasty for glenohumeral osteoarthritis with intact cuff yields 47% lower revision rate with an odds ratio of 0.53 and 43% lower overall complication rate with an odds ratio of 0.57 compared to cuff deficient indications across 20,924 patients. Now to trauma. Schlauch and colleagues published in the Journal of Orthopedic Trauma titled "Screw Density is Not Associated with Outcomes of Lateral Bridge Plating of Distal Femur Fractures." This systematic review and meta-analysis of six studies comprising 1,272 patients asked whether screw density influences reoperation rates for non-union after lateral single-plate bridge fixation of distal femur fractures. The work challenges the clinical assumption embedded in multiple prior bridge plating studies by demonstrating that screw density is not a determinant of union. One limitation: the retrospective cohort is underpowered with only 56 patients and 6 reoperations, limiting detection of a clinically meaningful screw density effect that the meta-analysis alone cannot exclude. Neither proximal nor total screw density is associated with reoperation to promote union in lateral bridge plating of distal femur fractures, with mean total screw density of 0.60 versus 0.61, p equals 0.98, between union and non-union groups across 1,272 patients. Shifting to sports. Arnold and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled "Return to Golf After Shoulder Arthroplasty," an ASC's multicenter study predicting performance after reverse total shoulder arthroplasty and anatomic TSA. This multicenter ASC study evaluated return to golf rates and performance outcomes after reverse total shoulder arthroplasty and anatomic TSA in 208 golfers across 17 institutions using sport-specific questionnaires and propensity score matching for age and sex at mean 24.3 months follow-up. One limitation: the study relies entirely on self-reported unverified golf metrics without objective performance validation and lacks a non-operative or non-golfer control group to contextualize the magnitude of improvement. 88.9% of golfers returned to play after shoulder arthroplasty at mean 24.3 months, with no significant difference in return rate or performance between reverse total shoulder arthroplasty at 95.6% and anatomic TSA at 90.0%, though revision arthroplasty independently predicted worse perceived golf performance. Moving to emergency medicine, Zhao and colleagues published in the Journal of Orthopedic Trauma, titled "Improving Emergency Department Efficiency with Large Language Model Guided Orthopedic Triage for Proximal Humerus Fractures." This single-center retrospective study evaluated whether GPT-40 and O4 Mini could accurately triage isolated proximal humerus fractures in the emergency department against a consensus gold standard of 4 institutional consult criteria in 315 patients. The study extends the general literature on AI-assisted clinical decision support by demonstrating that off-the-shelf generative large language models can outperform human providers on a rule-based, criteria-driven triage task in a defined fracture population. One limitation: the gold standard was determined by retrospective consensus review rather than prospective attending orthopedic assessment, meaning the benchmark itself may not reflect real-time clinical judgment. GPT-40 and O4 Mini aligned with institutional consult criteria in 92.4% and 94.9% of proximal humerus fracture cases respectively, versus 32.7% for emergency department providers, potentially eliminating 183 of 240 consults over 2 years. Back to sports. Lin and colleagues published in the American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled "Preoperative Instability Episodes as a Predictor of Recurrence After Arthroscopic Bankart Repair." This retrospective cohort of 151 patients sought to define a discrete threshold of preoperative instability episodes predicting recurrence after arthroscopic Bankart repair in patients aged 14 to 40 with on-track Hill-Sachs lesions and less than 20% glenoid bone loss at mean 6.0 years follow-up. One limitation: recall bias and self-reported preoperative instability episode counts undermines the precision of the primary predictor, especially in patients with high episode burdens. A threshold of 2 preoperative instability episodes predicts recurrent anterior shoulder instability after arthroscopic Bankart repair with an AUC of 0.72 and odds ratio of 9.70 with 95% confidence interval 2.63 to 35.7. Continuing in trauma, Joshi and colleagues published in the Journal of Orthopedic Trauma, it's titled "Trends in Posterior Malleolus Fixation and Subsequent Syndesmotic Repair in Trimalleolar Ankle Fractures." This retrospective database study used Pearl Diver to assess whether rising posterior malleolus fixation rates in trimalleolar ORIF correlated with reduced syndesmotic repair from 2010 to 2021. The work reveals that syndesmotic repair is being performed at dramatically increasing rates in trimalleolar fractures, irrespective of posterior fragment fixation, raising questions about whether current intraoperative stress testing thresholds are driving over-repair. One limitation, the absolute sample size per cohort year is unreported, and CPT and ICD coding cannot distinguish whether syndesmotic repair was driven by positive intraoperative stress testing or surgeon preference. Syndesmotic repair rates in trimalleolar ORIF increased from 10.1% to 29.3% over 2010 to 2021, regardless of posterior malleolus fixation status, refuting the hypothesis that posterior lip fixation reduces syndesmotic repair frequency. Moving to hip, Heo and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Increasing Procedural Volume and Economic Impact of Revision Total Hip Arthroplasty for Hip Instability in the United States. This study queried two national U.S. databases to characterize revision total hip arthroplasty for instability from 2012 to 2022, capturing approximately 16,228 annual cases at peak. The work quantifies the absolute national procedural burden and projects its economic trajectory through 2035, a dimension not previously modeled at this scale. One limitation, administrative database coding cannot distinguish primary instability etiology from revision cases coded incidentally under instability, limiting mechanistic interpretation and potentially inflating or deflating true incidence. Revision total hip arthroplasty for instability increased from 9,870 to 16,228 cases annually in the U.S. from 2012 to 2022, with projected volume of 28,830 cases and cumulative hospital charges of $533 million by 2035. Now to pediatric hip. Chakladar and colleagues published in the Journal of Pediatric Orthopedics, titled Automated Detection of Pediatric Slipped Capital Femoral Epiphysis, a deep learning approach using anatomically informed attention guidance. This study developed and validated a two-stage deep learning pipeline to classify pelvic radiographs as slipped capital femoral epiphysis, or no SCFE, using 139 training and 35 testing radiographs, addressing known inter-observer variability of Klein's line. One limitation, a test set of 35 radiographs is insufficient to characterize performance across CFE severity subgroups. An attention-guided deep learning model using UNET++ segmentation and EfficientNet B1 classifier detected SCFE on pelvic radiographs with AUC 0.893, 93.3% sensitivity, and 90.0% specificity on a 35-image test set. Shifting to epidemiology, Heo and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled Evolving Trends in Shoulder Arthroplasty, A Decade of Growth and Future Projections in Comparison with Hip and Knee Arthroplasty. This study queried the national inpatient sample and national ambulatory surgery sample using ICD and CPT codes to characterize national shoulder, hip, and knee arthroplasty trends from 2012 to 2022 and project volumes to 2035. One limitation, the wide projection range of 334,000 to 905,000 reflects model uncertainty and does not account for potential saturation effects, payer policy changes, or disruptive technologies that could alter adoption curves. Total shoulder arthroplasty volume increased 212% from 55,245 to 172,559 procedures between 2012 and 2022, with projected volumes reaching 334,000 to 905,000 by 2035, a growth rate exceeding both total hip arthroplasty at 45% and total knee arthroplasty at 25% over the same period. Moving to knee arthroplasty, Tsakopoulos and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Clinical Outcomes of Fixed-Bearing Medial Unicompartmental Knee Arthroplasty in Patients Older than 80 Years, a Matched Control Study. This study compared clinical outcomes of cemented fixed-bearing medial unicompartmental knee arthroplasty in patients 80 years versus 70 years, using prospectively collected data from 2004 to 2017, in 160 matched pairs at mean 97.3 months in the older group and mean 123 months in the control group. One limitation, the study is underpowered to detect meaningful differences in revision rate, as the wide confidence interval precludes definitive equivalence conclusions. Fixed-bearing medial unicompartmental knee arthroplasty in patients 80 years yields Oxford knee score improvement equivalent to patients 70 years at 5 years, with a non-significant revision risk ratio of 0.57, with 95% confidence interval 0.174 to 1.876. Continuing in shoulder, Asiotis and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled The Effect of Glenoid Rotational Malalignment on Best Fit Circles Based on AI-Generated Mathematically True Glenoid End Face Views. This study asked whether rotational malalignment of the glenoid end face view affects bone loss quantification used in instability planning in 40 patients. The work extends the on-track, off-track concept by demonstrating that the glenoid track calculation is vulnerable to systematic measurement error introduced by as little as 5 degrees of end face view malalignment. One limitation, the study does not validate the AI-generated mathematically true N-face view against a ground truth reference standard, so the accuracy of the reference position itself remains unconfirmed. Glenoid rotation of as little as 5 degrees from the mathematically true N-face view produces statistically significant errors in best fit circle diameter, position, and calculated bone loss percentage in AI-generated CT reconstructions of 40 instability patients. Back to sports medicine. Pasca and colleagues published in the American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled "Has the Protective Effect of Hormonal Contraception Been Overestimated?" A systematic review and meta-analysis of oral contraceptive pills and anterior cruciate ligament injury. This PRISMA-compliant meta-analysis asked whether hormonal contraceptive use reduces anterior cruciate ligament injury risk in females by pooling 8 studies identified through March 2025 in 18,103,890 participants. The analysis challenges prior observational studies and the emerging clinical narrative suggesting oral contraceptive pill use confers ACL protection. One limitation: extreme heterogeneity with I-squared of 97.3% across only 8 studies, driven by inconsistent hormonal contraceptive formulation reporting and variable athletic exposure definitions, makes the pooled risk ratio unreliable as a single summary estimate. Pooled analysis of 18,103,890 participants yields a non-significant risk ratio of 0.88 with 95% confidence interval 0.77 to 1.01, indicating hormonal contraceptives do not meaningfully reduce anterior cruciate ligament injury risk in females. Moving to knee infection, Yang and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled "Risk Factors for Failure and Reinfection Following One-Stage Revision Total Knee Arthroplasty, a Matched Case Control Study." This matched case control study identified risk factors for failure and reinfection after one-stage revision total knee arthroplasty for chronic periprosthetic joint infection in 132 patients, 44 failures and 88 matched controls from 2004 to 2025 at a single institution, with 84.1% of failures occurring within 2 years. One limitation: the small failure cohort produces severely underpowered estimates with wide confidence intervals, making the odds ratio for multiple failed surgeries clinically uninterpretable for precise risk stratification. Among 44 failure cases after one-stage revision total knee arthroplasty for chronic periprosthetic joint infection, history of multiple prior failed surgeries with an odds ratio of 13.27 and operative time 150 minutes with an odds ratio of 5.11 were independent risk factors for both failure and reinfection, with 84.1% of failures occurring within 2 years. Moving to hip arthroscopy, Villegas and colleagues published in the American Journal of Sports Medicine, titled "Psychiatric Diagnoses and Outcomes After Hip Arthroscopy, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis." This PRISMA-compliant meta-analysis examined whether recorded psychiatric diagnoses affect surgical and patient-reported outcomes after hip arthroscopy across 18 comparative studies. The work quantifies the specific magnitude of revision and failure risk attributable to formal psychiatric diagnoses rather than psychological screening scores alone. One limitation: grade certainty was very low for most patient-reported outcomes and complications due to heterogeneous psychiatric exposure definitions and high between-study variability. Psychiatric diagnoses are associated with 2.53-fold higher odds of hip arthroscopy revision with an odds ratio of 2.53 and 95% confidence interval 1.87 to 3.43 and 1.76-fold higher odds of arthroscopy failure, but no increased conversion to total hip arthroplasty. Back to knee arthroplasty. Lightman and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled "The Impact of Femoral Component Rotation on Patellar Position and Functional Outcomes in Total Knee Arthroplasty." This retrospective multicenter study examined how femoral component rotation relative to the posterior condylar axis affects patellar kinematics and functional outcomes in conventional and robotic-assisted total knee arthroplasty, stratifying cases from 6 degrees external rotation to 0 to 3 degrees internal rotation. The work demonstrates that femoral rotation precision within PNIC 3 degrees of posterior condylar axis, regardless of whether achieved by conventional or robotic technique, is the critical threshold for optimizing both patellar kinematics and patient-reported outcomes. One limitation: sample size and baseline patellar resurfacing status are not reported, making it impossible to determine whether patellar button presence or absence confounds the patellar tilt and translation findings across rotation groups. Femoral component rotation within 3 degrees of internal or external rotation relative to posterior condylar axis produced significantly better forgotten joint scores, CUS-JR improvement, and range of motion compared to components rotated by 3 degrees externally, with lateral patellar translation minimized specifically in the 0 to 3 degrees internal rotation group, P.01. Moving to trauma, McIlwain and colleagues published in the Journal of Orthopedic Trauma, titled Higher Baseline Resiliency Scores Correlate with Better Patient-Reported Outcomes Following Acetabular Fixation. This study asked whether brief resilience scale scores obtained 2 weeks postoperatively predict promise outcomes at 6 and 12 months after operative acetabular fracture fixation in 111 adults at a single level 1 center. The work extends the broader psychosocial outcomes literature in orthopedic trauma by specifically quantifying resilience as an independent predictor of all 6 promise domains after acetabular ORIF. One limitation, the 49% attrition rate at 12 months, introduces substantial selection bias, as patients lost to follow-up may systematically differ in resilience or outcomes. High baseline resilience with a brief resilience scale COI 3.7 independently predicted 12.4-point better promise global mental health and 6.7-point better physical function at 6 months following operative acetabular fracture fixation, continuing in knee arthroplasty. LaValva and colleagues published in the Journal of Arthroplasty, titled Intraoperative Fractures in Primary Total Knee Arthroplasty, Incidence and Outcomes from a Matched Analysis. This study used natural language processing-assisted electronic medical record query to identify all intraoperative fractures during primary total knee arthroplasty at a single high-volume institution from 2016 to 2021, matching 43 fracture cases, 1-6, to 258 controls with up to 5-year survivorship follow-up. One limitation, the small fracture cohort is underpowered to detect differences in outcomes stratified by fracture location, fixation construct, or implant constraint level. Intraoperative fractures during primary total knee arthroplasty occur at 0.21% incidence with 43 of 20,089 cases, but yield 5-year reoperation-free survival of 93% versus 91% in matched controls with a hazard ratio of 0.97. And finally, Matsui and colleagues published in the Journal of Shoulder and Elbow Surgery, titled Influence of Repetitive Batting on Capitellar Subchondral Bone Density Distribution. This cross-sectional CT-based osteoabsorptiometry study asked whether repetitive batting independently contributes to capitellar subchondral bone loading in 32 collegiate baseball players with 64 elbows by comparing 4 elbow groups stratified by throwing and batting handedness. The work extends prior literature establishing repetitive throwing as the primary risk factor for capitellar osteochondritis dissecans in adolescent athletes by demonstrating that batting mechanics do not independently load the capitellum. One limitation. All subjects were collegiate-level right-handed throwers with no symptomatic osteochondritis dissecans, limiting generalizability to younger adolescent players in whom osteochondritis dissecans most commonly develops. Throwing exposure increased capitellar subchondral bone density with mean Hounsfield units of 962 versus 8084, p equals 0.04, in collegiate baseball players, but batting handedness produced no detectable side-specific capitellar loading difference. That wraps up this week's Ortho Digest Rundown, 30 studies reviewed. Head to orthodigest.com for the full write-ups. Until next week, stay current.